And good evening once again, everybody. Welcome to another Hoops HD Under the Radar podcast, the podcast devoted to all those teams that nobody other than the puppet over there and I are talking about, I think. I am your host, Chad Sherwood, coming to you live here on Wednesday evening, February 18th, around 9:30 p.m. We are recording this in the middle of rivalry week, and with me is my number one rival, David Griggs. David, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Watching Duke, North Carolina right now, I don't believe it fits the category of being under the radar, though, so we're not going to be talking about it, even though I know we're both watching it.
Yes, and but it is part of rivalry week, and I think one of the things we want to start out with here, a little change from our normal, have a special rivalry week edition of Under the Radar, and we wanted to talk about some of the key under-the-radar rivalries. They're in-conference rivalries between teams that should be on the under-the-radar ESPN Rivalry Week, maybe on like ESPN Ocho or something like that.
And again, Rivalry Week was the creation of, I think they had the Duke-North Carolina game, and to properly blow it out of proportion as to how big it was, they decided to create an entire week of rivalry. So every conference, and then some, that ESPN was contracted with, they would just start putting rivalry games on. The problem is, I don't know if you saw the editorial that we posted today, conference realignment caused ESPN to sort of run out of rivalry. So now we're having to use our imagination just to get enough games to have rivalry week, but we still have it. Because it's an ESPN creation, very few of the teams we're going to be talking about actually played this week, but we feel that these are legitimate. And in a lot of ways, I don't know how you feel, but with the under-the-radar conferences, for the most part, have not, I mean, they have to some degree. We've lost Boston Northeastern. We've lost some other ones, but you know, Lipscomb-Belmont, we've lost that one. But it's been pretty safe. There's still a strong semblance of conference identity and rivalry in these leagues, maybe even more so than the power conferences.
I agree with that. I mean, there's a couple of leagues that really did get destroyed by the whole realignment. I think the Colonial is one of them.
Yes.
Even more so, the Summit got destroyed, and the WAC became a complete mess. But But most of the other conferences out there that we talk about week in, week out, have somewhat of that core group that has become rivals, and those teams have been able to stick together through all this realignment mess. And I think we want to just run through some of those top rivals. And probably, I don't know if we really rank these, but the first one I want to discuss, at least, in the Metro Atlantic, is a game that was on Friday night, this Manhattan-Iona rivalry.
Yeah, and that's really kind of, you know, watching that game and the intensity in that arena, and it's that way whenever those two play. It's more often than not, they're two of the better teams in the league, if not the two best teams in the league. But even when they're not, that is a boiler of a game. It's not in this big cavernous arena. It's in this smaller gym, and it was just this intense atmosphere. The players went at it. I mean, maximum effort, maximum emotion, just a great game to watch. And that's kind of like what I said, when you're watching that and it's always like that, seemingly, no matter when they play or how good the teams are, the cliche of throwing the records out the window exists with that when both New York-based, both longtime conference rivals. It was just a great rivalry. And, God, what a game on Friday. If you missed it, it's on ESPN3. Go back and watch it. It was a great, great game. Great win for Iona. I mean, I know Manhattan isn't really strong, but it was only their second loss at home. So a real good win for the Gales.
Right. I agree with you. Next up, David, I guess the one we highlighted here in the MAC is Akron and Kent State. That may be the top rivalry in the MAC, but I've got to say, almost any game you have in the MAC, when you've got six teams from the state of Ohio in the Mid-American Conference, on top of that, you've got three Michigan teams in the same conference, there's a ton of great rivalries in the MAC. We're not going to go through each of them, but I think we just want to highlight this Akron-Kent State one. It's probably the best of them all.
I think that is the best of them all. And, you know, before, I know about Ohio, Miami, Toledo, Bowling Green, Bowling Green, Miami, Bowling Green, Toledo. I mean, any basic combination. The thing about the Mid-American is that it's very centrally located. You mentioned the six Ohio schools, and then not even any further away, you've got, you know, Eastern Michigan. Eastern Michigan, Toledo, and then Bowling Green are basically in a line separated by maybe 50 miles. Mm-hmm. And those are public institutions, so a lot of the kids grew up together. When I say kids, students and alumni, they've lived in those areas for a while. A lot of those players come from local areas, so there's this huge sense of familiarity all across the board, and they go at it. I mean, Kent State and Akron, they're typically the two best teams. I think that one is, if I had to pick the biggest one, it would be that one. But it's the whole league. And we've referenced this before. Sometimes it's so hot that teams that come in having done a couple things out of conference that you think they could get in at large, but if they hold serve, have a hell of a time holding serve in this league.
Yeah, I mean, take a look what happened tonight. Bowling Green lost to Miami of Ohio, and we were just looking at Bowling Green as a team that was getting ready to really step up and take off in this conference.
Right.
You had another great game between Akron and Toledo tonight as well.
Yeah, Toledo really looking good. So, and man, this is a show up in Cleveland, this conference tournament. It always is.
It is, and a little news today, actually, they just extended this conference tournament through 2023 in Cleveland, so it's going to be there for quite some time to go in the future.
Yeah.
Another rivalry, pair of rivals we want to get discussed in the Ivy League. I think it may be the number one under-the-radar rivalry out there, even though it's almost completely meaningless this year, is Penn and Princeton in the Ivy League. That is just such a heated game always.
It's heated, and it's definitely got the most history. I think for however many years the Ivy's been in existence in its current format of the 8-team round robin, those two would basically separate themselves from everyone else. So basically, you had two. Whenever those two played, it had NCAA tournament implications. So there's how much it meant on paper, and then off paper, you're right. They really don't like each other. I don't know. Penn, Princeton, they're not exactly geographically close.
I mean, it's about an hour apart there.
I didn't even realize it was.
Yes, it is very close. Actually, I would say.
Okay. Because, I mean, the other one was Harvard and Yale, and again, the two of the more traditional rivals.
Right, yeah, Harvard and Yale, and obviously this year, that is the top two teams. In the Northeast Conference, one of our favorite rivalries, I think, this is St. Francis Brooklyn versus LIU Brooklyn, two teams, I believe they're almost across the street from each other.
Yeah.
Despite one of them being called Long Island U, but we won't get into that.
Right, yes. We've covered that.
But that is probably the top rivalry there. I wanted to very briefly mention one out of the Southland Conference, the Stephen F. Austin-Sam Houston State rivalry has been a good one as the top rivalry in that conference, I think. And, again, this year at least the top two teams once again.
Right.
And a couple rivalries out of the Patriot League. Lehigh-Lafayette.
Is great.
Yeah, it really is.
They're 17 miles apart. I just remember when you watch as much college basketball as we do, you run into situations where announcers think they're giving you the holy grail of trivia, even though it's things everybody that pays any attention already knows. For instance, Duke and North Carolina have never met in the tournament. You're going to hear that announced 5 or 6 times tonight as if it's this unbelievable fact. Duke and North Carolina are 8 miles apart. Whenever Lehigh and Lafayette play, how far apart are they, Chad? 17 miles. You hear it about 27 times in a 40-minute game.
And you heard it tonight with the Xavier Cincinnati game as well. You know, sitting there. I mean, they actually showed video. I don't know if you saw the beginning of the game. They showed video of the drive from one school to the other. I mean, the other rivalry we wanted to briefly mention in the Patriot League, of course, is Army Navy. I think it's more of a football rivalry. I don't know that the basketball has the heat to it. Mainly, probably because Army has never really been a factor in basketball.
Yeah, and Navy hasn't been. I think they finished second 8 or 9 years ago, and other than that, other than when David Robinson was there, they hadn't really been much of anything.
Any other rivalries you want to mention, David? I have one other I want to throw out here as an honorable mention.
Go for it.
The newest rivalry, the number one rivalry in the Western Athletic Conference, New Mexico State, Utah Valley.
Yeah, that one got interesting last year.
They're meeting tomorrow night, coming up Thursday night. They're playing in Utah Valley the first time. Well, actually, the second time they've met since the fight, but the first time back.
Yeah.
Back in Utah, that's what you have in these new conferences that have been realigned. You know, the teams that have played each other five times ever. It's not a rivalry yet. Come back in 20 years, maybe it will be.
And, I mean, one of the ones I really miss, they still play, but it's not the same, the VCU-Old Dominion rivalry, so good. It's nice to have VCU-Richmond back as a conference game, but really, can't we get all three of them in the same conference?
And then you also had James Madison thrown in there as well. I mean, yeah, you had a lot of good rivalries right there in the state of Virginia that got destroyed when the Colonial broke up.
Right. VMI the Citadel, an interesting one. I don't think that it's a conference game anymore, or is it? No, it is.
It is back to being a conference game. It was, in fact, our Under the Radar game of the day a couple days ago. It was back to a conference game for the first time in about 15 years this year. So that's a good one that we did miss.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we wanted to go through our conferences like we always do, but we actually wanted to go with a quick update first. We had a major breaking news among the Under the Radar conferences over the weekend when Central Connecticut State lost a game, becoming the first postseason eligible team that's in a conference to be mathematically eliminated from the NCAA tournament. We are down to only 332 teams left. If you look on our main website, we have a link there for the survival board. It was updated. And we are actually going to see over the next couple weeks, we're going to start seeing teams bouncing more regularly. I think we have a couple teams in the Ohio Valley Conference on the verge of elimination.
And then, of course, the Ivy as it continues to play out.
Yeah, the Ivy, you're going to probably start seeing eliminations this week as well as Yale and Harvard pull away from the rest of the pack. So keep an eye on that. We're going to update that more as we get closer to the tournament, and we'll talk about that a little more. But, David, you want to ready to run through the conferences here?
I am ready.
All right. Well, let's start, as we always do, up in the America East, where Albany finally lost a game in conference play the other night, falling at home to Stony Brook after starting out 12-0. It had actually been a 15-game conference winning streak dating back to last season, but it's gone now.
Yeah, real nice win for Stony Brook. Albany still with a 2-game lead, no real risk. I think they have 3 games remaining.
Now, two of them are home games against Vermont and against Hartford, so not gimmies. Although Vermont didn't do themselves any favors tonight, losing to Binghamton, so that kind of game.
Yeah. Well, anyway, barring a really unexpected collapse here, Albany most likely the number one overall seed, going to be hosting that conference tournament. Just real quick, and it'll have to be real quick, on Friday night, out of conference at NJIT, holy cow, the team of the people. The people's fans were incredible. I was really impressed. You had been there in person. What an atmosphere. Seriously. Wow.
I watched it with you on the video stream, and there was choice. I mean, I thought it was pretty packed when I went to see them play and beat Yale. There was twice as many people there. They had some temporary stands set up at one of the baskets that hadn't been there. It was an electric atmosphere, but Albany didn't pull off the victory, unfortunately, for the team of the people.
Right, and I know we're going to get to them later, but I didn't think it was going to be close. They really took them to the wall. The cameras were shaking. I guess you noticed that.
Well, I was at the game. This is a very small camera on a tripod with one guy sitting at the top of the bleachers. This is by no means, you know, the high-level professional product you get in some of these other games you see on, you know, ESPN3 and the like.
Right, okay.
Over in the Atlantic Sun, Florida Gulf Coast has a 1-game lead right now over North Florida, 2 more games back to South Carolina Upstate. Clearly, it's one of those three teams, and I think Gulf Coast is going to be the team at the end of the day here.
Yeah, four games remaining, a one-game league. The magic number is two. I don't have their schedule right in front of me, but I would imagine everything's winnable. They do play North Florida again, don't they?
Yeah, they will play. They play North Florida at home on the 25th. They actually have four games left. They play tomorrow night. They play upstate over the weekend, North Florida and at Jacksonville. So three out of four at home. They did lose North Florida the first time around, so North Florida does control their own destiny at this point. If they can,
they do.
If North Florida wins that game at Gulf Coast, and as well as their other three remaining games, they will take that number one seed in the tournament.
Right. So again, big finish here, and again, doing it right with campus sites. I believe we're about to talk about a conference that doesn't do it, or are we?
We will talk about the Big Sky first, and they do it in a different format, but they do let the number one seed host it, and they do it right. We had an interesting weekend, actually, in the Big Sky, where...
Yes, we did.
Things started off with Eastern Washington. I guess starting with last Thursday, Eastern Washington picked up the huge home win over Sacramento State.
Yeah.
Looked like they were ready to run away with the conference. Then they go and lose at home to Portland State.
Really, really surprised. And Portland State isn't the bottom of the league, but they are far enough down there where you would not expect Eastern Washington to lose that one at home.
But it was okay, David, because in the meantime, Sacramento State went and lost at Idaho.
Yes. So, I mean, it all cancels. I mean, missed opportunities.
Oh, drives you crazy. Yeah, I mean, so that still gives Eastern Washington a one-game lead in the loss column. I guess the only thing all that did was it actually put Montana right back into the mix here again. They are now tied with Sac State at 10-3 in the conference. They were able to win their games this weekend. And they have a game at Eastern Washington left. They've already played Sac State. They're not going to play them again.
Right. So, again, Montana, like you said, getting up into the fight there. All right.
But over in the conference that does not do things right, and the conference that last week I think we had a seven-way tie for first place.
Yes.
This week we're down to two teams tied at 11-4, three more down at 10-5, 9-6, and an 8-7.
Yeah, the cue ball has hit the balls and separated a little bit. There is the league is taking some sort of a shape other than just a logjam block. But we're still pretty logjammed. I mean, to have five teams separated by one game, 15 games into the conference schedule, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And we're talking about the Big South. High Point and Charleston Southern, who I don't think we've mentioned once this year, is the other team tied with them at this point.
Right. Charleston Southern, they had the big win over Ole Miss, I believe it was, to open the year. Haven't done much since then, but they've been pretty impressive in conference. No one really has talked about them. You were kind of high on them in the preseason, I think. But, I mean, I was thinking it was going to be Coastal all the way. Coastal has five losses.
Oh, that's an interesting question. Was I high on them? No, I was not high on Charleston Southern at all. I had them pick ninth preseason.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. I didn't remember being on them, but it was Coastal all the way. We thought it would be Coastal. In the end, whether Coastal finishes second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh, David.
Yeah, they're hosting the tournament because of this atrocious format we have.
Which means that I think no matter what, they're going to be your favorite to win the conference tournament.
Yes.
Not saying they're going to win it, but they'll be your favorite. Over in the Big West, we now have a two-game lead for those UC Davis Aggies. Did you see this happening?
Oh, all the way. I mean,
whatever.
Back in August. one of the best stories in all of college basketball, not just under the radar, but all of it. One of the biggest surprises. I think it is the biggest surprise. I'm more surprised by this than anything.
Yeah, this has been the greatest season in UC Davis basketball history at this point. No matter, they could not win another game, it would still be their best season ever.
Right. He won't get any consideration for it at all. I could make a case that Jim Les should be the National Coach of the Year. He won't be. I don't even think he'll get a single vote. But who's done? I mean, Archie Miller at Dayton is another guy, considering all the setbacks they've had and the weak personnel and the injuries, how much he's done with only six. Really, a player rotation of six. But Jim Les is way up there. Ben Jacobson's way up there under the radar conference, but not team. What an incredible job Jim Les has done.
Jim, last year, UC Davis was dead last in the Big West. They did not even qualify to play in the Big West Conference Tournament. They were 4-12 in conference, 9-22 overall. They're sitting here right now, as of today, 19-4 overall, 9-1 in conference. You're right. It's unbelievable what they've done.
Yeah, it really is. Good for Jim Les. I hope they can hold on to him. California is warm. Most of the other places aren't. So.
Yeah, but there might be a job opening or two in California, too. So.
Well, there's that. Yeah. Well,
there probably should be one in Southern California. But.
Well, don't go to USC. It's a lateral move at best.
It's probably a downgrade.
Downward spiral move there.
but over in the Colonial, William and Mary went and got their butts kicked tonight by Northeastern. I'll put it that way. And we now have a new first place team, the UNC Wilmington Seahawks, in sole possession of first place.
Are they really? I thought we had a four-way tie.
They're 10-4. They play tomorrow night against Delaware. They win that, they'll have a full one-game lead.
Yeah, this conference is – William and Mary has kind of fallen apart these last couple weeks. They were really rolling. And it isn't just that they've had bad luck or run in the tough team. They just don't even look that good all of a sudden. If this were a professional show, we'd know. Are they having injuries? I mean, how do you explain that sudden downturn?
Well, I kind of explained it on the – you know, the ghosts there in Williamsburg that have haunted William and Mary for the past 60-plus years and kept them out of the tournament. That, I'm not that certain how else you do explain this. Let's just take a look here. They have actually been missing Daniel Dixon their last three games. He's a guy that was a solid contributor. He had some pretty good games in there, but I wouldn't say he was their top player, but he has been out these last three games, did not play against Delaware or Northeastern. That might be what's causing the losses, but they should still beat Delaware, and they should still be competitive, at least against Northeastern.
Yeah, for sure.
Moving on to the Conference USA. First of all, we got to say goodbye to Old Dominion. I'm done discussing them at this point.
I know. Again, they looked really good out of conference. Nothing they did out of conference seemed to indicate that they would struggle nearly this much. You figure just law of averages, they're going to stub their toes once or twice. They are 7-5, a full three games behind Louisiana Tech. It's a one-bid league. Do you see any consideration at all if La Tech wins out?
No, I don't, because I look at La Tech's profile right now. So start with them right this minute. Yeah. They have one top 100 win, and it was at UTEP. Worse, they only have three top 150 wins versus three sub 150 losses. That's just, you know, when you have more sub-150 losses than you have top-100 wins, that's not there. And, yes, they have two more shots to get top-100 wins at ODU and home against UTEP. Yeah. Enough to overbalance losing at Lafayette, losing at North Texas, and losing at UAB. I don't think it will be. Maybe if they make it to the conference championship game and they pick up if they get UTEP in the semifinals and they get an extra win there, that's probably the second best win you can get in conference.
Right. Their schedule.
I don't know. I still don't see it.
Their schedule did them no favors, but
238 strength of schedule from La Tech.
As weak as their schedule was, they had their chances. They avoid the loss to Louisiana Lafayette, and they pull off the win at Temple, which at the time seemed like a bad loss, but as it turns out, it really wasn't. Suddenly, if they're 22-4, I think we are talking about them.
Yeah, I could see if they had only two of these bad losses, or better yet, only one of them, I definitely would be. It's just when you've lost six ties, but three of them are that bad of a loss, it's really tough to argue for them. Maybe I change my tune if they do literally win out to the conference championship game. But I've got to see where they are, and I've got to see what the rest of the bubble looks like at that point. And at that point, maybe I give them a brief consideration, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. Over in the Horizon League, Green Bay looks like they are going to win tonight. I actually haven't gotten an update on that score recently, but
they had opened it up. So
yeah, they've opened it up by 20 right now. So you know they are one game behind Valpo, who beat them over the weekend, though.
Yeah, and Green Bay, they're having a good year. I don't want to knock them and say that they're a bust. But, I mean, to be critical, I thought this was an at-large caliber team coming into the season. That was sort of the expectation I was holding them to. They are not. They haven't really looked like it really at any point. They're a good team. They have a chance to finish first. They might get the automatic bid. They're not an at-large caliber team. And it's not that they don't have the paper. I think Murray State can be an at-large caliber team, but they're not getting an at-large. This Green Bay team just is not an at-large caliber team.
Well, okay, so you're just saying they don't pass the eye test then.
Because
if you look at their paper compared to La Tech, who we were just discussing, this is a way better paper. They've won at Miami.
It's way better paper, yeah.
They don't have those sub-150. They have sub-100 losses, but not sub-150 losses. They have neutral court wins over Evansville and Gulf Coast, win over Georgia State, win over Valpo.
The paper's there. Mm-hmm. Not for an at-large, but it certainly suggests that it's certainly better than Murray's paper or Law Tech's paper. But their team, I've just been kind of disappointed in them, even though they're 20-6.
Yeah, I mean, again, but, you know, they've got four more regular season games left.
Yeah.
Three more after the one tonight. They will then get a... If they win all three of those, they will get a bye at least as the 2 seed, if not as the 1 seed, because that will include a win over Cleveland State and knock Cleveland State out of that tie for second place. And then they just have to win 2 games to get in the tournament. I think that's the way they're going to have to go.
Oh yeah, it is. They'll need the automatic bid. Now the Horizon does it super extra right. It's campus sites. It's a ladder, and it's a ladder.
It's a ladder. Yeah. With buys into the semis and everything, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
The Ivy League.
Yes.
7-1 tie between Harvard and Yale. Yale, I would have to honestly say, has looked a lot better in conference play than Harvard has.
Yeah.
Although Harvard won the head-to-head game.
At Yale. And they did it at their house. Now, as good as Yale has looked the last week or two, it is completely offset by how bad they looked in that first half against Harvard.
Well, that was an atrocious first half.
Yeah.
Wow. But, I mean, Harvard, every time they go out to play, I think, wow, the way they're playing, they're going to lose this game. I mean, they struggled with, I think they struggled with Columbia. They lost at Dartmouth. They needed overtime to win at Brown. Yale has pretty much been pounding everybody they've played other than the loss to Harvard. The thing is that if Harvard could just squeeze out these wins over everybody other than Yale, they win the conference.
It's at Harvard. It comes back to Harvard, but the two will play again.
Right.
So they're both still in control of their own destiny.
Right. This weekend, Harvard will be hosting Penn and Princeton. Yale will be hosting Cornell and Columbia. I expect both teams to be 9-1 after this weekend, but we'll see if anything crazy happens.
Right.
Over in the Metro Atlantic, we already talked about that Iona-Manhattan game. At this point, Iona's running away with the conference. I don't think there's anybody else to contend with them.
No, and you just hope they don't pull a Cluse in the conference tournament. I got to say, this Iona team's pretty good. They haven't always been good. They do have 6 losses. They still have some losses where, in typical Iona fashion, you're asking yourself, how in the hell did they manage to lose that game? They had some other near close calls against St. Peter's, but for the most part, this is the most consistent they have been since Tim Cluse has been there. He's done a great job with this team. I'm setting them up to lose their next 2 or 3 games, I realize. But they've always had a high ceiling, but they always fell way short of it more than they should have, hence the term clusing. They haven't clused much this year, though.
Now, they've lost once since January 1st, and that was a game at Canisius. Their next game coming up Friday night at Marist. Clearly winnable. They've got the rematch with Manhattan at home coming up February 27th. That's their toughest game left, and that's the But even if they lose that, they lose one more time, they'll take the conference. In fact, if they lose two more times, they'll take it because in second place there is Ryder, who they've already beaten on the season. So
right, yeah.
They've swept them on the season. The Mid-American Conference, we mentioned also earlier that Bowling Green looked like they're about to take a step up before they turn around and lose to Miami, Ohio tonight. We now have 4-9-4 teams as we record this. Bowling Green and Kent both tied at 9-4 in the East. Central Michigan and Toledo tied at 9-4 in the West. And Akron at 8-5 in the East, still in contention as well.
Yeah, and again, Toledo got the big win tonight against – I mean, really good. This league is gridlocked. It's packed full of rivalry. It's just going to be fun the rest of the way. Again, as much fun as Cleveland is, you almost think it would be a little bit better if it were campus sites. We've alluded to this before, Chad. This is a league that has a smattering of teams. It's not unusual for us to be coming in the conference play. I think we did it this year with Buffalo. And it's like, well, if this team can hold serve 14-2, 15-1, run away from the conference, they'll be inside the bubble. When was the last time anybody ran away with this conference?
It feels like it's been a long time. I couldn't tell you exactly. But what this conference does have, it almost may work against some of these teams. They have almost what I call an extended ladder format. The top two seeds, regardless of division, will get buys into the semifinals. The third and fourth seeds will get buys into the quarterfinals. Yeah. Everybody else, five down, has to play five games. So basically, you look at it as a triple buy for the top two teams, a double buy for three and four. But of those five teams I just mentioned, at least one of them will be having to play five games to win the conference tournament. If it was today, Akron was going to have to go and play, start with a game against Ball State and then play another game before it even gets to a Toledo or a Kent State. And then beyond that, you got to go through Bowling Green or Central Michigan to even reach the championship game. It's a real tough road if you can't be one of those top four seeds.
Right. So, I mean, there is a lot at stake down the stretch. A lot.
Right. And it should be an exciting end to the season here in the MAC. Yeah. In the MEAC, we still have North Carolina Central running away with it, 12-0.
Yeah.
And Norfolk State, your second best team, but can't be caught at this point, I don't think.
No, I mean, again, I think there's only four games left, or is it – yeah, there's only four games, or is it five games?
There's four games left for those top teams, yes.
Yeah, so NC Central very close to clinching at least a share, two wins away from clinching it outright, and that means they get to wear a white in the great city of Norfolk, I think.
Right. And that's maybe the biggest thing working against them is if Norfolk State's the two seed, and if they do reach the championship game, there is a home court advantage there somewhat for Norfolk State. It's not on their home court, but in their home city.
Right.
Down over in the Missouri Valley, obviously the top two teams are not under the radar teams by any means, Wichita State and Northern Iowa, and I think we've agreed at this point that nobody else looks like it's seriously going to contend. I still like this Evansville team as the third best team. If somebody's going to make a run in the conference tournament, that's who I'd keep an eye on.
Yeah. No, I mean, no one else. Again, you wonder if any of these teams would even see the NIT. When you look at some of these RPIs, they're pretty it's night and day.
I could see some type of postseason, be it like CBI or CIT for Evansville, Illinois State, maybe Loyola, but I don't think it's I don't think you have NIT teams here.
Right.
Another conference that a few weeks ago looked like it was going to be a logjam crazy run and now has a team pulling away from the field is the Northeast Conference. St. Francis Brooklyn is now 12-2 in league play, and I believe they have now run off six straight wins, 9 out of 10, looking really good.
They really are looking good. And I mean, they are, again, like you said, sprinting away from the rest of the league. They are going to be jacked. Again, how many games are remaining? Is it four?
And they have four games remaining. Their first two are at home. Against Fairleigh Dickinson and SFPA. Then they will go across the street to play Brooklyn, and then they end up Bryant.
Okay, so again, Fairleigh Dickinson, if they lose that, then they should be disqualified from in fact, they should have to shut the program down for 2 years. But this team is rolling. There is a lot of electricity. I realize that they're not the Johnnies. They're not really even Syracuse, but there is a little, and you can probably speak to it better than I can, being there is a little bit of groundswell. There's a little bit of electricity around this St. Francis Brooklyn team within the city.
Yeah, this has probably been their best. I think this has been their best season in maybe in forever at this point. Just been a great season, and yeah, I mean, fans in Brooklyn, fans in New York will come out for teams when they come out of nowhere like this, and there has always been a small loyal fan base that's really growing with what this team has done, and
they were featured in the New York Times,
right?
And it referenced this, and their arena is packed. Granted, it's tiny. If they have home court advantage throughout this conference tournament, I'm telling you, if you're any sort of a college basketball fan at all, even a casual fan, it will be destination programming. Log on, tune in, watch it. It's going to be an incredible atmosphere. It really is.
And they could, I mean, they need a couple of other games to go their way. They could lock up home court even tomorrow night. But They only need two more wins, and this FDU win is almost given tomorrow night. So a team that has locked up the number one seed in its conference and guaranteed themselves at least an NIT bid is this Murray State team. The congratulations as the regular season Ohio Valley Conference championship has been locked up. At 13-0, one of only four teams in the country that are undefeated within their conference, joining Gonzaga, Kentucky, and North Carolina Central.
Yeah, and in typical Murray fashion, they've made it way more exciting than what is necessary. Public service announcement here. Once you understand why I'm abruptly stopping here, second half at Arizona State has begun. The curtain of distraction is in effect. Okay, back to the under the radar.
Unfortunately, there is no curtain of distraction conference because we would be giving an automatic bid to those kids. But the two seed in the Ohio Valley will go to the East Division champion, and that is where we have the battle right now between Eastern Kentucky and Belmont, I think.
Yeah, and EKU, they've looked pretty good their last few games. Have they rescheduled that game or replayed? I know that they had one canceled earlier.
They had one canceled because it was rescheduled for this coming up Monday night. They did have one. They had a home game against Austin Peay canceled postponed because of weather over the weekend.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so again, big race there. Real quick, how dangerous is this Murray State team? Is this a team that can get out of the round of 64? I think that it is. But what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, in the end, it's going to come down to matchups. But this team, they've lost four games of the year. One was at Xavier. One was to Valpo, who we do like as a good team. They lost a game to Portland and a game to Houston. The game to Houston was the first game of the year. They weren't quite ready for it. I'm willing to ignore one loss like that. But, they have some solid wins, though. They've won at Evansville. They've beaten Belmont and Eastern Kentucky. They beat a decent Illinois State team.
And when you watch this team, you get the sense that they're never playing up to their ceiling. Over the weekend against SEMO. Who is not good by any stretch of the imagination. They trailed the whole game and then finally decided to wake up and win on the road. It's like, why don't you guys play that way for the entire game? It's there. They just don't always play up to it.
And SEMO had that game won. They really let birds back in the game.
Yeah, so. But again, one of the teams to keep an eye on, because when they do play up, they can beat you. Anyway.
David, there is only one conference in the entire country where every team in it has lost at least 11 games, and that is not the WAC, it's not the SWAC, it's the Patriot League. With a champion on their way to Dayton this year. Absolutely. Right now, Bucknell with a one-game lead over Colgate, probably still our pick. They've been our pick for a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
I still think this conference tournament is going to be exciting because I think anybody
can absolutely will be. Army, our a team we thought about adopting.
Don't even talk about it.
Not doing as well as we had thought they would.
Yeah, Army right now scheduled to be the 10 seed if the conference tournament were to start today, and they'd be on the road at Holy Cross in a play-in game for the first round. So
yeah,
so much for our Army team.
Yeah,
even if they're good enough to make the run, to have to go and win four games on the road, I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, it would be a story, though.
The SoCon, we have a one-game lead right now for Wofford over Chattanooga. I still like this Wofford team. They have lost twice in conference, once inexplicably to Citadel, second game, a home game against Chattanooga. But
in a game they really blew. I had forgotten about that when I was working my top 10. But, God, what a disappointing loss that was.
They did bounce back and pounded a middle of the SoCon level Western Carolina team over the weekend.
Yeah.
They've got four conference games left. They do, including a trip to Mercer, who's your third place team right now. So.
Right. And God, Wofford, I mean, without those two losses, both of which were extremely winnable, I mean, you're sitting here at 23-4 with an RPI probably somewhere in the low 30s.
Yeah, they're at 40 right now with those losses, so think about that. Interestingly enough, they have a BPI of 103 and a KenPom of 97. So huge.
A little bit of a slight discrepancy. They're a little statistical oddity there.
Yeah. The Southland Conference, the first place team by half a game is those Sam Houston State Bearcats.
And that's who we're projecting into the. No, it's not. No.
Well, it's not who we're projecting, David. Although we'll get to them in a few minutes. You are now looking at a. Solid, 92 RPI, 70 KenPom for Sam Houston State. They, unlike Stephen F. Austin, have beaten Texas A&M Corpus Christi this year.
Wow. In front of a crowd of at least a dozen people, maybe even 13 or 14, SFA went in there and they finally did it. I mean, they had farted around for seemingly half their games last year. They did it this year. And again, these are sub, very, very weak programs. And they finally lost one. The reason they lost is because I just got done talking about how, although they didn't have the paper, I thought that they were a bubble equivalent team. That's why they lost the game.
I honestly would have to say, though, even with that loss, of all these under-the-radar programs outside of the Missouri Valley or the West Coast Conference, they may still be the one closest to a bubble if they win out and lose to Sam Houston in the conference championship game, including picking up another win over Sam Houston. But I don't think with that loss that they are getting a serious consideration, which kind of means I don't think we're seeing any at-large bids from any of these conferences.
No, and again, it's highly... I mean, if those two are on track to meet in the championship game, if everything holds serve and they beat all the sub-250 teams around them... again, how formidable is Sam Houston? I got to be honest, Chad, I've only seen them once or twice all year. And once was when SFA just blew them to oblivion.
Well, what Sam Houston did do in a pretty big game back in December, I think this was an early season under-the-radar game of the day even, they had a big home win over that Eastern Washington team out of the Big Sky, and they pounded them. They beat them by 24 points. At the time, I was shocked by that result. As the season has gone along, I understand that result. I think the Sam Houston State team is not that far behind SFA.
They may not be. Even though they got blasted at home.
They got blasted at home. Let's see what happens at Stephen F. Austin last game of the season. Let's see what happens in the conference tournament. If this is up in this conference tournament, I'll put it that way.
Yeah. I wouldn't either.
The SWAC, Texas Southern. Shall we move on?
Yeah, what a bizarre league. We're still uncertain, as is the SWAC League office apparently, how many teams are in the conference tournament or who's in the conference tournament.
What I know for certain is Alabama State and Southern, who are both ineligible, both are planning to go to Houston. Perhaps they're only going with 9 teams and going to leave the last place team right now. That would be Grambling, and I think Grambling's already clinched that or come close to clinching that. If not, maybe their website is just wrong and they're going to have 10 teams in it.
Now, again, we got to touch on this real quick. We've already gone through the MEAC. We have a high abundance of sub-300 losses with Grambling here. Do they have a case? Can you, if it were a debate class, can you make a case that Grambling and not FAMU is the Centenary Award?
Yeah, let's talk a little Centenary Award. I was going to do this at the end of the conferences, but let's do it right now. The big news over this past week for the Centenary Award, the worst team in college basketball, is that FAMU, amazingly to me, won a game. They beat North Carolina A&T.
Yeah.
Right now you have two teams that only have one D1 win, that only have one win overall, and those are both FAMU and Central Arkansas. Central Arkansas's win was a lot better, beating New Orleans. I don't think Central Arkansas is in serious consideration. You have two teams, though, that have two wins, neither of which were D1. One is San Jose State. The other is a Grambling team.
In San Jose, their schedule's too strong.
I know Lee Delvecchio is going to be arguing for the San Jose team, but when it comes to this Grambling team, non-conference, they played a tough non-conference schedule. They went to Notre Dame, to George Washington, to Purdue, to Oregon State, to Washington, and to TCU. But what their conference schedule does to them, their conference schedule is so pathetically bad.
Yeah.
Now, they do have five more games left. There's a lot of play left in the SWAC here still.
Yeah.
And every game in the SWAC pretty much is a winnable game. So, I may not be ready to make a decision yet, but right. I think there's a very strong case, despite two overall wins, that Grambling is worse than FAMU if they lose out the rest of the season.
Yeah, but they have to lose out. I mean, this
they have
season.
To lose out.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Summit
good for
League.
FAMU, by the way.
Yeah, none congratulations.
Of those, yeah, none it's of those
shocked me.
Yeah, played D1 ball ever, I don't think. Or they got
there
one.
There was one player, a transfer from NJIT, that's the only one that played D1 ball going into the season. So
yeah. So I mean, for them to be able to beat a D1 team with no Div1 players, literally. I mean.
All right. Summit League, we've still got this two-way tie between South Dakota State and North Dakota State. I really think it still comes out to a coin flip between the two of them.
It really does.
The conference tournament being in Sioux Falls gives South Dakota State maybe a slight edge. They'll maybe have a few more fans there. Though North Dakota State travels well. So.
They do. And I mean, that's going to be a good game if it holds serve and those two teams meet. IPFW, I believe that was our preseason favorite, really coming alive here lately.
It was your pick. I actually like this Oral Roberts team preseason, but they're both actually tied for third place right now.
Yeah, so...
But of course, the most talented team in the league is in seventh place, so...
Yeah, and I just want to say, the most talented team, maybe in all of Under the Radar, is in seventh place.
We're talking about the Denver there.
The most talented yet poorly coached team in the history of organized sports. This is a conference race neck and neck that isn't nearly as much fun as it should be because they're playing at a predetermined site. I realize logistically with this conference stretching from, Indiana to Denver, it's harder to do campus sites. It's just really unfortunate that they can't find a way to do that.
Well, I would again argue if you can't do that, use the Big Sky format. Everybody go to the regular season champions.
Yes, exactly. That's what they should do.
Sun Belt, another conference playing its tournament at a predetermined site in New Orleans. Louisiana Monroe with a half-game lead over Georgia Southern and another game back to this Georgia State team. Georgia State, every time I start to think they're gonna start turning things around, maybe not. I don't know. I still think they have the most talent by far of anybody in this conference.
Right.
They do still play both Louisiana Monroe and Georgia Southern in the last two games of the season coming up March 5th and 7th, so they'll have their shot.
Mm.
But I don't know. I don't have much faith in them at the moment.
Yeah, Georgia Southern has joined the Sun Belt and just made themselves at home, winning every single football game.
Interlude here. The curtain of distraction is about to be unveiled.
Okay, yes, we have to hold it. We need to stop here. And what do we... But anyway, Georgia Southern winning every game. This is... Oh, get the floor mopped. Here we go.
And the UCLA player, as we do this, is...
Oh, my God!
And there he is. It's God knows what it is.
It's a shirtless man in a hula skirt. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Oh, my God.
Oh, and the doors are closed, and there he is again.
Yeah. No.
Some shirtless fat guy with a beard waving a towel.
Yeah.
And the free throw is up, and no good. It works.
That? How do you do that? Wow. What were we talking? Oh, under the radar. Okay, sorry. The curtain of this, it's even affecting us. But UCLA gets the rebound. Foul him.
It has distracted us from under the radar. That has definitely. Yeah.
Right, David. Anyway, Georgia Southern, just real quick, first year in the conference, and they're just running roughshod over everybody in seemingly every sport. Kind of surprisingly so, too.
Yeah, I did not expect them to be competitive in basketball.
Or football. Really?
Yeah, what they did in football, winning the Sun Belt as still a transitional up to
FBS and they couldn't
team.
Go to a bowl game because they don't have enough scholarship players. Yet they just destroyed the planet. Okay.
West Coast Conference, we're not going to talk the Zags. I still have an eye on this BYU team for an at-large bid if they win out, which is going to require them to win at Gonzaga. Well, I don't know if you really agree with me on that or not, but...
Well, if you win at Gonzaga, you suddenly have something on your profile much, much better than anyone else on the bubble will have, and that alone will get you a look.
Right.
But my only thing is, I don't think... I mean, if Northwestern wins the Big Ten tournament, they'll be in the field, too. It's just, what are the odds of that actually happening?
Yeah, the odds are not good, but again, they're just kind of... I mean, there's enough there and enough talent on this BYU team. We discussed this a little bit Monday night. Enough talent on this BYU team that I think that they can be competitive in the tournament. I think they could win games in the tournament.
Yeah, they can. Because they have the talent. They just haven't played well this year.
Over in the WAC, New Mexico State now is the only postseason eligible team with a winning record. Grand Canyon is 15-11, but they're still transitional.
Yes.
On their way to Dayton, we'll put it that way.
Yeah, and not only, oh my God, UMKC is four games. Nobody is going to finish with a winning record other than New Mexico State. Wow. But they'll be in the field. There's going to be one team from the state of New Mexico in this field, and it's not the Lobos.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Finally, last but certainly not least, the NJIT Highlanders, the team of the people.
Yes.
After the Albany loss, they did beat Maine Fort Kent at home. That gave them their 16th win of the season, tying the school record. Also, five games over 500 again, tying the school record. Yeah. Their next game isn't for 10 more days, so next time we do an Under the Radar, the record will not have changed. But February 28th, they play again. They are hosting Sarah Lawrence. David, before we came on the air, I did a little research into this, because with this win over Sarah Lawrence, they will set the school record for wins in a season for the high water mark of over 500. Sarah Lawrence is a Division III school, currently 1-22 on the season.
Okay, I like the people's choices.
I think they got a little shot to win this game.
Okay, I have an initiative here, and it's very ambitious. But as you know, we had a game canceled presumably because of weather, Western Carolina, Cleveland State. Now, again, I don't know why that game is occurring in the middle of conference play, but it was canceled, and there is no plans for them to make that game up.
It will not be made up, correct?
It will not be made up. Both the SoCon and Horizon League tournaments are over relatively early. There's about another 5 or 6 days. NJIT only played 26 games. You're allowed to play 30. This is pulling...
NJIT played 29 games.
Oh, they did?
Well, will have played 29 games.
Will have... Okay, I only counted 26. So can they play one more because there's no conference tournament?
I believe that they can play one more.
Okay. One of these teams needs to invite NJIT down. It's a curtain call for this team. It's another game for the team of the people. If you're not going to make the game up, then at least schedule NJIT. Don't schedule Central Connecticut State. They're allowed to play another game, as is other teams that will be eliminated. Schedule the team of the people. Get that extra game in there. We need to make this happen. Take to Twitter and make this happen. Call us IDs. Everybody.
Well, if you don't do that, at least, you know, take to Twitter and confirm, follow up with collegeinsider.com that we do get NJIT games after the end of the regular season, get them in that CIT. That has been our goal all season.
Yes.
After the Sarah Lawrence game, they still have one more game after that, March 4th, down in D.C. against Howard. That could be a pretty good game. It's a road test for them. Howard, you know, fourth or fifth place in the MEAC type of team.
Yeah.
With that, David, we want to move on to our top 10 lists. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I mean, I originally had Wofford number one, but I think I got to swap that out for both Wofford and SFA coming off rather disappointing, somewhat surprising losses. I like this Wofford team, but again, I've seen SFA. That I just think they're pretty good, so I would have SFA 1 and Wofford 2.
I would have SFA 1. I have Green Bay 2, Wofford 3. Yeah. I have more faith in this Green Bay team than you do still.
You might fall down when I say this. I have the Iona Gales at number 3. I just love how they're playing. I thought about moving them all the way up to 1, honestly, even with Kloos at the helm.
I have Iona down at 7. They are on my list. I had Wofford 3. I have BYU at number 4, who I just mentioned as because I still think they are in the outside at-large bid consideration. I have that Murray State team undefeated in conference at number 5.
I have them at 5, too.
Okay. I have Harvard at number 6, and then Iona at 7.
Yeah, I originally had Valpo 6. I know it says Eastern Washington. That's a mistake. And then La Tech at 7. UC Davis and the Fighting Jim Lesses, I have them at number 8. 9, I would have Toledo, and then 10 right behind them, conference rival Bowling Green.
Okay. Well, I would have beyond Iona at 7. I have Yale at number 8. I brought them into my top 10 as well. They're just so close to Harvard. If I'm going to have Harvard at 6, I've got to have Yale in this list, I thought. At number 9, another team that's undefeated in their conference, I think that's deserving of a top 10 spot at this point in the season, is North Carolina Central. And at 10, I put that Valpo team that you just mentioned. Yeah. I did give two honorable mentions, one of them to your UC Davis Aggies, the other to the Sam Houston State team. Very nearly made my list. They were in my original list until I realized I'd forgotten about Valpo. But I think that this team is not that far behind SFA, and I have SFA at the top of my list, so... Right. I think they belong up here.
That's a good point. And again, I mean, you just hope that they hold serve. If they split the regular season, and which you just hope that those two hold serve and meet in the championship game. You don't want some sub-250 team out of this conference.
It is a double bye system, so assuming they're the one top two seeds, they'll only have to win a semifinal game to get there.
Mm-hmm.
We want to do a quick preview, as we always do, of upcoming games here. Coming up on Thursday night, a couple big games in Conference USA. Louisiana Tech has a road test at Charlotte, while Western Kentucky's at UAB.
Yeah, UAB's been real solid at home this year. They were actually tied for first for a minute, and then they went on the road, and now they're no longer tied for first, losing it right. But the thing is, the tournament is in Birmingham. So you kind of got to watch out for that. Is that entirely fair that it's at a predetermined site like that? But
I mean, when you're talking Conference USA, you're talking about a conference that going into the season, you always think at least there might be at-large bids here. And we talk about the season that there would be. So I'm not as offended about a predetermined site for Conference USA as I am for a conference like the Horizon, like the Big South, where you know going into the season it's going to be something crazy is going to happen for them to get an at-large bid.
Right. So, again, UAB been very strong at home, very weak away from home. Hosting Western Kentucky, we'll see what happens. I mean, as good as this La Tech team is, UAB blew them out earlier in the year. So, not an easy game for Western.
A couple other games coming up tomorrow night. UNC Wilmington's at Delaware. I mentioned that earlier. They can open up a full one-game lead in the Colonial with the win there. Yeah. Although this Delaware team has been playing a lot better since it got into conference play.
Yeah, UNCW was one of the better teams in the league in the classic Colonial lineup. They haven't been good for a while, but they're good this year.
They've come out of nowhere. I mean, this conference play started, they were awful in the non-conference season.
Right.
Battle for first place in the East Division of the Ohio Valley between Eastern Kentucky and Belmont coming up tomorrow night.
Huge game.
Huge game there. Another huge game in the Big West. UC Davis is at Long Beach. UC Davis wins this game, the conference regular season race is over, I think.
Yeah, it basically is. And even if they don't, Long Beach has been really disappointing. Even when they've won, they've had to sweat it out to do it. I really want to see this UC Davis team in the NCAA tournament.
And that game will be streamed on ESPN3 tomorrow night, so I'd definitely be tuning in for that. Another huge rivalry game tomorrow night. We mentioned this at the top of the show, New Mexico State at Utah Valley.
Coming up Friday.
Cleveland State is going to be at Green Bay in a big game near the top of the standings in the Horizon League.
Double bye implications for home court implications. Hugely important game there.
If Cleveland State wins this game, I mean, obviously Green Bay, they said they are maybe in anybody's at-large bid discussion, they'll be done with that. And Green Bay may be having to look to play four games instead of two games to win the automatic bid at that point.
This is a big one. It's huge.
Coming up Saturday, there's a lot of good action. A couple of games I want to highlight here. Bowling Green is going to be hosting Buffalo in a – I mean, every game in the MAC is probably important these days. That's one of the ones I pointed out there. Eastern Washington has a road test at Northern Arizona. It's middle-of-the-road Northern Arizona team that did beat St. Mary's this season, so – keeping an eye on that one. Keeping an eye on Harvard. They're hosting Princeton. Princeton has been probably the third best team in the Ivy League this year.
Yeah, surprise. I was not expecting them to do anything this year, but they've been better than what I thought.
Near the top of the A-Sun standings, Gulf Coast is going to be hosting South Carolina Upstate.
Yeah, a team that we thought would be good but really hasn't been. Gulf Coast should win that one.
A revenge game coming up Saturday. Wofford is going to be hosting the Citadel after that huge loss earlier this year. If the Citadel gets a sweep, I'm going to be I don't know what I'm going to do.
If Wofford loses that one, they're banned from the top 10 and for the rest of the year.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And a really big one coming up Saturday in the Conference USA, Louisiana Tech is at Old Dominion.
Yeah. And again, a real big game. Old Dominion just has been really weak away from home, but they've been strong at home. Should be a good one. Good test for La Tech.
When I was picking games, I was actually this morning to highlight, I noted Saturday's game, William & Mary at Hofstra. It's going to be talking about a first-place Colonial team, but we no longer are, so maybe not as big of a game. Iona's going to be hosting Monmouth, a competitive Monmouth team.
Yeah, fairly competitive. So, again, and this is a good Iona team.
Really interesting game coming up Monday night, David. I want to get your thoughts on here. We have a game where we have a conference where two teams are tied for first place at 10-2, with a third team half a game behind at 10-3. One of those two 10-2 teams is at the 10-3 team. Normally, this would be hands down the game of the dead night for an under the radar game when you have that type of situation.
Yes, of course.
But it's Alabama State at Southern, the two ineligible SWAC teams.
Yeah. Alabama State at Southern. Anyway, it's this is it. I mean, there's going to be a tournament of teams that are not eligible for the tournament, and this is the championship game. Oh man,
these are the two best ineligible teams. I think.
I think they are.
That maybe with Incarnate Word are the three best, but
yeah. Wow.
This is the APR championship game. We'll put it right, that way.
The non APR championship game.
That's pretty much it. There's coming up Tuesday, a few more really good games coming up in the MAC. But again, like we mentioned, that almost every game in the MAC is huge stakes this season.
Yeah.
So with that, David, anything else we want to address tonight?
No, it's just NJIT to the CIT and then NJIT to the America East or the NEC, one of the two.
Well, what I would like to address is that UCLA was just fouled again.
Oh, yes. Again, this is great. We have the curtain of distraction coming up. And on that note,
have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you again real soon.